for follow traffic, clear visual front, you're waiting for right, maintain 17 down on the 5 mile 5 mile 17 5 out.
What does the future hold for one of aviation's most promising paths toward greater sustainability? From the National Business Aviation Association, this is Flight Plan. I'm Rob Finfrock. Sustainable aviation fuel, also known as SAF or SAF, remains perhaps the most important tool driving business aviation's commitment to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. The industry has been aware of the benefits of SAF for some time now, but it's only been over the past few years that we've really seen availability of this fuel ramp up across the country and overseas. That said, relatively few FBOs offer SAF even today, and when you do find it, prices remain notably higher per gallon than conventional jet fuel. So, what does the future hold for SAF, and will new pathways for producing these fuels make it more widely available and lower prices in the process? Today's guests have some interesting and exciting perspectives on those questions. We'll start with Steve Zonka, Executive Director of the Commercial Aviation Alternative Fuels Initiative, or CAFI.
To date, the aviation industry has approved 8 methodologies for producing a standalone SAF blending component, as well as 3 methodologies for co-processing blended SAF in existing refineries. We're currently working on 11 additional pathways for producing standalone SAF blending components, as well as 3 more co-processing pathways. And additionally, we're progressing through the concepts of generic co-processing, giving the refinery a lot of flexibility on the types of biocrudes that they bring into a refinery and how they do that, as well as blending components that can be used up to 100% neat, or foregoing the need to do blending going forward, or the blending of blending components. So taking some of those 8 different methodologies and perhaps putting them together to produce a fully formulated synthetic jet fuel. And going forward, we're likely to see additional pathways be introduced. I talked about 11 more. There's likely to be more than that. Historically, I've always talked about 15 to 20, and I think that's still reasonable. And when we get there, it enables a full range of feedstocks and both biochemical and thermochemical conversion processes. And we're also considering further improvements and flexibilities to the concept of introducing new synthetic aviation turbine fuels that might also mean the introduction of new means of production, like producing biocrudes in hub and spoke kinds of concepts. In the U.S., this past year, we closed with 38.7 million gallons of domestic neat blending component production, combined with 73.1 million gallons of imported SAF. All of that fuel, so the 111.8 million gallons, was produced from hydroprocessing of fats, oils, and greases, either from a standalone facility or via co-processing, so HEFA or co-processing of fats, oils, and greases. That's a nice increase. That represents about a 6-fold increase from 2022 and about a 300% increase from 2023. So we are on a nice ramp right now. That's in the U.S. Worldwide, I think IATA estimates that there was about 330 million gallons of production last year. Back to the U.S., our focus has been on achieving the goals of the SAF Grand Challenge, which is an interim target for our entire industry of 3 billion gallons by the close of 2030. And so moving from 38.7 million last year to 3 billion by 2030, that defines an average annual growth rate of about 2 or 2.1. So not unreasonable. And if I project out with the different facilities and different technologies that we know are advancing nicely, or where there have been, you know, significant announcements made, we stay on a pretty good trajectory through 2029. And it's perhaps only that last year where we'll have difficulty doubling our production capacity to actually achieve the 3 billion gallon goal.
My next guest is Connor Madigan, founder and CEO of Aether Fuels, which aims to increase SAF production through using the Fischer-Tropsch process that enables use of additional feedstocks.
The HEFA and related co-processing technology is a fantastic breakthrough for the SAF industry. And as Steve shared, it's really the main way we're making SAF today. The challenge there is just that there's not a lot of the fat, oil, and grease feedstocks that HEFA uses in the world. And if we use all those feedstocks globally to make SAF, we're still only looking at being able to make a few percent of global aviation demand. It's an important step forward, but it's still in a way a drop in the bucket. And so one of the big challenges facing the industry is how do we keep scaling beyond that limit? And that's how we get to these next generation technologies that convert abundant carbon feedstocks like CO2, biogas, agricultural waste, municipal solid waste, industrial off gases, all of these things that are available at in a much higher volume than those fats, oils, and greases, but which are intrinsically lower value components. And basically, the way to think about it is it just takes a lot more work to convert those into a finished SAF fuel. But there's a lot of great progress over the last couple decades on technologies in that area. And one of those approaches that's actually been around for a long time is called Fischer-Tropsch. It's a technology where you first take your input feed and convert it into what's called syngas, CO, and hydrogen. And then you convert that syngas into hydrocarbons using the Fischer-Tropsch step, using some unique catalysts. And then finally, you take those raw hydrocarbons and you do what's called upgrading and turn them into SAF. So broadly speaking, what we do at Aether Fuels is we optimize, intensify, and simplify the Fischer-Tropsch process by innovating actually the step right before and after the Fischer-Tropsch synthesis step. And that's the step where you make syngas, and then the step after where you upgrade. We call that solution Aether Aurora, and it combines some novel catalysts, some novel equipment, and some novel process integration to really cut down on the CapEx, the cost of the plant, improve the OpEx by boosting yield and efficiency. And the last point I like to make, which I think is really important for the scaling challenge in the industry, is that our approach was designed from the beginning to be quite flexible in the type of streams that it can take in. So from a chemical standpoint, what that means is that at the front of our plant, we can take in any combination of light hydrocarbons, CO, hydrogen, and CO2, and efficiently convert all of those into our syngas that we then use downstream to make our hydrocarbons. And because we have that flexibility, that means that our technology is compatible with taking CO2 and hydrogen if you want to do e-fuels, with taking biogas if you want to use biogas streams or renewable natural gas, taking the output of a gasifier, which can be used to convert municipal solid waste or biomass into gas stream. And we can also even take industrial waste gases like off gases from chemical productions. So because of that flexibility, we're able to deploy our technology in more places and scale it up using whatever feedstocks are locally available. And that's really critical because in many cases, moving around waste carbon streams is expensive. And you really need to use the streams, the inputs, where they're being produced or very nearby. And having all of this flexibility, what we kind of think of as being like a Swiss Army knife technology, allows us to go put the tech down in the place where that feedstock is available and make use of it and use a completely different feedstock somewhere else where that's what's cost effective.
Integrating SAF into existing fuel production and the utilization of waste components are other key aspects driving SAF availability. My third guest today is Alexei Beltikov, co-founder and CEO of Universal Fuel Technologies, which is addressing those challenges with what it calls flexiforming.
One of the challenges that the SAF industry, SAF production industry is facing is the availability of feeds and the diverse nature of the feedstocks and the fact that they're all distributed and not necessarily available in large quantities in any one place. So that means that we have to put the conversion technologies that actually make SAF out of these feedstocks at the scale and at the site where these feedstocks are available. Much of that work, the sort of the heavy lifting, would be done by companies like the one Connor is representing. We are going to pick up where he leaves off, specifically, for example, from the Fischer-Tropsch technology, as well as from HEFA technology. There's always this byproduct called naphtha, and I'm sorry, it's getting slightly technical, but that naphtha has a limited use outside of a petrochemical industry. And so if your SAF production plant is not close to a petrochemical plant, then that naphtha is a fairly low-value product. So we can, using our technology, pick it up and make it into the aromatic component of SAF that is otherwise lacking in both Fischer-Tropsch output and the HEFA output. And so in this way, the owner and operator of the main facility, whether it's Fischer-Tropsch or HEFA, they can then blend that aromatic stream coming out of our tech into their SAF stream and make a fully drop-in product. So this way, it's going to be fully fungible, obviously, after ASTM gives the approval and everything. It's going to be fully fungible and can be transported by regular pipelines and other means, put into the same storage, put into a plane, and so on.
Steve, after hearing what Alexei and Connor's companies are bringing to the table, are we on the right track to drive greater SAF production?
Well, sure. That's one of the reasons why the aviation industry is being so broad in its introduction and approval of different pathways. And so these two methodologies are just two of several, either of the existing pathways that could be slightly expanded to accommodate their technologies or completely new pathways. The end goal was what we're trying to do is, instead of using a petroleum-based crude, we're looking for reasonably priced biocrudes, waste streams with hydrogen and carbon in them that we can use chemistry to convert to the molecules in jet fuel. And everything that we're doing only produces the molecules that are in jet fuel. You know, our industry is not allowing these extraneous molecules to come into the process. So any one of these pathways that we've talked about as being approved or on the verge of being approved, they all do the same thing. They give us hydrocarbons in the jet fuel range. So, you know, it's the beauty of the overall process is that irrespective of which feedstock we start with, which specific conversion technology we start with, we still wind up with jet fuel blending components. So it's the sum of all that's going to get us to, you know, the goal of replacing petroleum-based jet fuel. And we're looking forward to seeing all of those pathways come to fruition. And it's not just a matter, people ask me all the time, it's like, which one's going to win? Well, I'm sorry, it's not that simple. I think all of them are going to have some place to play because feedstocks are not ubiquitous around the world. And if you find yourself needing fuel in some austere location, you're going to look for the ability to produce the lowest cost fuel in that location. And it might be a very unique scenario. So we could wind up with, say, of a specific technology, you know, one, two, or three refineries of those around the world that are taking advantage of the ecosystem, you know, where you want to produce fuel at.
I just want to piggyback off of Steve's observation before we lose that thread on aviation industry having taken a really broad view of potential solutions. So it has been immensely helpful for companies like ours that the aviation industry already paved the way for so many new fuel production technologies. Our Aether Aurora approach is already part of the approved Fischer-Tropsch pathway, and it's been incredibly helpful for us that that work was done and has been done for many different pathways. So innovative companies like ours can come in and move much more quickly into the market.
And also building on Steve's point, Connor, I'm fascinated by the ability you mentioned to produce biofuels from waste products. That really sounds like the ultimate example of true sustainability.
It's really a big challenge to make sure that your whole approach is end-to-end, fully sustainable, and that you think about all of the potential indirect consequences of using a feedstock and making a fuel. And so we really have focused entirely on waste feedstocks that do not compete with any kind of food production, do not lead to any negative land use. And that's really been critical for us to make sure that we're able to produce fuels that have the lowest GHG impact and are truly sustainable end to end. And we do believe that that's really the future for SAF. And of course, in the end, though, even if it's sustainable, and even if you could make it with feedstocks that are available, if it's too expensive, we won't get there. And so, of course, everything that we're focused on now with our technology is how to make the fuel cheaper.
And Alexei, your company is working toward those same goals.
We're basically doing the same thing in a different way. Some of the feedstocks that we're picking up, and to my knowledge, it's really rare that these feedstocks can be converted into the same product as what we can do. These feedstocks are not particularly valuable in most cases, and that's what makes it economical and what also bolsters the availability. I mean, if you consider the entire current and future market of the Fischer-Tropsch and HEFA technologies, between 10 and 20% of their output tends to be of these sort of low-value byproducts, and that's what we can pick up and convert into SAF. We also, based on the pilot work that we have done last year, it looks like we can come close to half a prices in most cases, and in some cases, we can even approach the price parity with a fossil jet. So that's our little contribution to solving the SAF availability and affordability problem.
To that point, Alexei, is the challenge to spurring increased SAF production and driving costs down a matter of technology or policy?
In the end, it's all driven by cost and price, right? So partially, this is also influenced by government incentives. Like, for example, there are actually much more capacity that is capable of producing SAF in the world today than is making SAF. Because in many cases, the choice between making SAF and making renewable diesel, both of which are viable products from a HEFA technology, that choice is driven to a large degree by the government incentives. And if the incentives are skewed more towards renewable diesel, then that's what people are going to do, and that's what they're doing. Apart from that, it's a matter of having a feedstock at a decent cost. And companies like Ether, obviously, are at an advantage here because they can use literal wastes and being very efficient with your conversion technology.
I think one of the key things in the next stage of scale up for these next generation technologies is getting over the first of a kind production facility hurdle. And what I mean by that is that as we move out of the sort of technology demonstration stage, we need to translate these technologies into large production facilities and prove that they work at that full scale. And the hurdle that you encounter at that point is that you need to do a first plant at some point that is hundreds of millions or even can be a $1 billion scale facility. And the joke my project development team always uses that everybody wants to be first to build the second plant. And because of that challenge, it can be quite difficult to get financing to assemble all the capital for that plant because the risk is higher because it's first of a kind. So that means folks will want a higher return on their investment, but making these projects super profitable is still not so easy because the technology isn't at its fully optimized state yet. So that's a critical challenge. I'm confident that we're going to be able to get through it, but we do need a lot of tools to do it. There's various programs around the world to provide debt preferred pricing that's very helpful. There's a number of funds starting to be set up on the private equity world that are focused on doing first-of-a-kind projects where they're getting more expertise, more knowledge to be able to better assess risk and price that risk. We're seeing the development of insurance products that are able to provide technology insurance for new technologies like these so that financing entities can get more comfort that if something doesn't work, they could still get some of their money back. And as you assemble all these pieces together, down to things like even developing supply chains for waste feedstocks. All of those pieces have to come together for these plants to be successful. But the good news is that we're starting to reach that point where you're now seeing the first projects start to get approved. You're starting to see the financing come in. And also what's good is that it's a global effort at this point. And so we're no longer dependent on any one country or one geography, so that even if there are variations from year to year in the specific regulations, if you stay flexible as a company, as we have, we can look to where in the world the projects are most sensible at the moment, use those projects to scale. And then, as I said, once you're doing the second plant, it's easy. But that's, I think that's really that first of a kind hurdle, from our view, is really the biggest challenge in front of us.
Steve, it sounds like we have some real momentum with expanding pathways toward making SAF more widely available and, of course, more affordable.
I look at it as pretty much a balanced view. Yes, there's plenty of progress being made, but there are still plenty of challenges with respect to the big picture, right? The big picture is we're a 100 billion gallon a year industry. Business aviation uses about 2% of that. So it's a significantly large opportunity. And we continue to need lots of new and unique approaches towards delivering those kinds of volumes of fuel, either in terms of making feedstock available, new conversion technologies, getting these first facilities in the ground, giving confidence to off-takers with respect to long-term agreements to continue to facilitate their businesses, et cetera. So lots of good work, lots still remaining, and that's what we, CAFI, and a lot of others are focused on, is continuing to make real progress.
Business aviation continues to play a significant role in driving the use of SAF and in other sustainability programs. Those efforts are also at the heart of Climbing Fast, an advocacy initiative showcasing not only our industry's commitment to sustainability and innovation, but also its importance to companies and communities of all sizes. Learn more by visiting climbingfast.com. And that's the latest from the National Business Aviation Association. Remember, you can subscribe to Flight Plan wherever you find your favorite podcasts, and you can find us on YouTube, or by downloading episodes directly from nbaa.org. I'm Rob Finfrock. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for a new episode of Flight Plan.
Wildlife base, sending out 3500.
All right, we got him inside. We're still on effect 170.